The new year started off violently in the occupied West Bank of Palestine when a 36-year-old woman, Jawahar Abu Rama, was overcome by tear gas fired by the Israeli army at protesters in the town of Bilin on December 31st. Jawahar died on New Year's Day. Villagers who participate in a weekly protest are joined each Friday by Israeli supporters and international solidarity activists who are demanding the rerouting of the separation barrier Israel has built, which cuts villagers off from their land. The Israeli Supreme Court has ruled in the Palestinians' favor, but the barrier remains. Abu Rama, the woman who died, was the sister of Bassem Abu Rama, who in April 2009 was also killed by an Israeli tear gas canister fired directly at him at a similar Friday demonstration in Berlin. Many other protesters have been injured by Israeli forces at the town's weekly protests. Between the Lines, Melinda Tuhus spoke with Josh Huff, communications director with the U.S. campaign to end the Israeli occupation based in Washington, D.C. He spent almost 2 years as part of a Christian peacemaker team living with Palestinians under siege in South Hebron in the West Bank. He discusses the deteriorating situation in the West Bank and his group's letter sent to Combined Systems, Inc., or CSI, the Pennsylvania-based corporation that supplies most of the tear gas canisters to the Israeli military.
The Abu Rahme family is a prominent family in the Bilayn area from which many of the nonviolent demonstrators have come and which has suffered disproportionate casualties as a result of Israel's violent repression of this nonviolent action. There have been a number of the male residents of that family have been imprisoned wrongfully. And then over the last weekend, Jawahar Abu Rahme, the 36-year-old woman from the same family, now the second person in the family to be killed from Israeli violent military repression of these weekly Friday demonstrations, in this case from the inhalation of tear gas. And so we're going to be continuing to put pressure on the State Department using these newly emerging cases of egregious Israeli military violations of human rights and international law, the wrongful killing of unarmed civilians in the West Bank, to continue to put this in front of U.S. policymakers and people who oversee the special relationship between the U.S. government and the Israeli government. And also the letter that one of our member groups has taken the lead in drafting directly to CSI, Combined Systems Incorporated, which is a U.S. company which manufactures, we are told, the vast majority of the tear gas canisters that are used by the Israeli military in the silent repression of nonviolent activists. The U.S. campaign, we're going to be presenting this letter to CSI, basically saying that you have to stop dispensing these materials to the Israeli military, because given the Israeli military is continuously, systematically violating your own instructions, CSI, and potentially also in violation of U.S. laws, including the Arms Export Control Act, which says that you can't use U.S. supplied weapons for these means, like we've been doing for several years with the Caterpillar Company, to basically demand that they stop providing these weapons to Israel and using these specific horrifying stories like the death of Jawahar this last Friday to try to convince them of that. And then also sharing these communications with CSI, with the State Department and whoever else in the U.S. government that we're able to speak with, and then also with the general public and the media to show the linkage that CSI is substantial responsibility for this horrible unfolding of events.
Josh Huff, when I was in Berlin for one of the regular Friday protests back in 2008, the Palestinians, their Israeli supporters, and the international solidarity activists who were there were completely nonviolent. But there were just a couple of Palestinian youths who were shooting stones with slingshots toward the Israeli soldiers. And then Israel used that to say the protest was not nonviolent. Your comment?
One, I would say, just look at the disproportionality of force. We're talking about not stone throwing against unarmed Israeli civilians, but stone throwing against very well-armed Israeli soldiers. I've been there also myself a couple of times during the Friday demonstration, and what I see there is very similar to what I've seen a lot more of, actually, in South Hebron, where I've worked much more extensively. Yeah, I mean, stone throwing youth is a pretty common feature of these interactions between local people and the occupation forces when they come to raise hell. The second thing I would point to is that, yes, under the laws of occupation, which Israel claims to follow, that are laid out in international law, to which Israel's government is a signatory, some types of military force are justified in the protection of Israeli citizens and Israeli military and police security personnel. And so at least part of the argument I think that they are using for their systematically overwhelming use of force against these people. But from what I've seen, the cases in which they're taking this action and using that argument to defend it is cases where the military or other security personnel are actually taking the initiative, are being instigators, coming in, trying to rile up the response from the youth of the village, and then severely punishing them in response to the inevitable reaction from the youth. And it's really incredibly impressive how in cases from Bilayin to Atuani in South Hebron Hills, where I've worked most extensively, how the vast majority of people locally, including the youth, many of them consistently choose not to respond violently.
That was Josh Huff of the U.S. Campaign to End the Israeli Occupation, a coalition of more than 300 organizations. Contact the campaign by calling their Washington, D.C. office at area code 202-332-0994 or visit their website at endtheoccupation.org.